The Christmas Eve column is my gift to you, my readers, listeners here on the Chicago Way podcast. Every year I rewrite it. I don't just copy and paste it from the year before. I tweak it, I change it, I retype it, I rewrite it. Because I want to remember the words. I want the words, I don't want them just to become something of the past, but I want them to be part of my life all the time, in the present. When I first wrote it, John Williams kindly read it, I think, on WGN Radio. And an editor, a couple years later, after it had been running a few years, asked me, "John, your Christmas Eve column, it sounds like a prayer." And he smiled. He was an old altar boy. And I smiled, and he understood it, and I guess so do you. The headline I would put on it always would be, "O Holy Night," but I don't write the headlines. I don't know what they'll put on it. The Christmas Eve column for 2020. For all children who should be loved always, but especially tonight, with our arms around them and a long goodnight kiss on the temple, a kiss more precious than anything wrapped in a box. For all the parents standing quietly in the doorways of the bedrooms, watching those small sleeping shapes. For all the children who may grow up with a hard crust around their hearts because there was no one to plant those kisses or give those hugs. For every couple that adopts a child. For every young mother who has given her child up for adoption in order to save that precious life inside of her. For all the couples that have tried to have children of their own yet were unable. For all of those who have lost their children. And for everyone who's lost their moms and dads. For all of you who've kept your faith and optimism in this most difficult year, kept it close through the confusion and the fear of the pandemic and the barking dogs of partisan politics, and kept it through the isolation and capricious government shutdowns of houses of worship, and through all the loneliness that comes through isolation. For every family that wishes it could be together as it was last year, in those pre-virus times, when we'd be able to hug and kiss each other and laugh without reservation. For all the elderly in nursing homes tonight who've been isolated and ache to touch and hug their children. Don't worry. You'll all be together again with those you love. Have faith. Because tonight is the night of new hope for the world. And for the independent restaurant owners, tavern keepers, neighborhood diner operators, crushed by arbitrary decisions of politicians who feast and live like lords. And for all the choirs that in years past practiced for weeks in cold, empty churches. Tonight is the night to remember those beautiful voices and how they invited us and invite us to humble ourselves and ask for help in scraping away any of the bitterness that has taken root over this terrible year. For all the friends and relatives who never let political differences become a wall. They don't wait for some special night to begin building a family. All year they've been building it, tending it with their care and their time. So they'll show up even with masks on, unannounced on some random morning in June or a cold evening in October, just to see if you're okay. And tonight is for them. And tomorrow too, because they are family, by friendship, by blood, by the X of family. For the young who are lonely and empty and angry and don't know why. For those who are far away and can't make it home this year, and those who are distant in other ways and near yet far in their hearts and minds and think they can't ever go home. They might think that they've locked that door behind them. But that door is always open. Just reach for it and see. Come and see. For the old men alone, wishing they could sit at the end of the bar as they did last year and nurse their drinks and half watch the TV in some clean, warm place with the sounds of life going on all around them. For the old women alone tonight, awake in their beds, remembering the laughter of children and a house full of hungry guests to feed. For anyone who has met with the doctor to hear the dark flutter of dark wings. For the paramedics, police and firefighters, nurses and physicians who go to work every day in this year of the pandemic. And for supermarket cashiers, store managers, and others who show up at work. Thank them. And for all those parochial school teachers and the schools that have been kept open. In Chicago, the Catholic school teachers and others going to work every day to teach the children because they know what is important. Thank them, please. And for those on the night shift tonight and those who must be at work tomorrow and for their families waiting for them to come home. For everyone in a hospital tonight praying for dignity and relief. For an end without pain, shame, or suffering. For the physicians and nurses who enter those silent rooms and pull up a chair to hear quiet midnight confessions. For the clergy who've struggled with their faith and thought it was lost, yet find it again and are renewed. And for all the sailors at sea tonight, those standing watch on the bridge, staring out into cold black water, remembering brightly lit rooms. For the United States Armed Forces who protect us with their lives. For the United States Foreign Service and Intelligence Services, men and women who walk alone into shadow to protect us. And for their families that wait quietly and can't tell you why. For the American Republic, the last best hope of man on earth. For the Constitution of the United States, which guides us to keep our liberty. And for the American people who never ever quit. And to everyone I've hurt with cruel and unnecessary words on some of my worst days. It's been a rough year, but there's no excuse. I ask for your forgiveness. And for everyone on earth who in this most difficult year have kept hold of what is most important about this very special night. What is important? It is the message, a message that was brought to us by that perfect infant born in the manger so very long ago. He came to light the world. He is the gift, and it is all about love. And I hope it comes to you and comforts you and remains. For Jeff Carlin and his family, from my brothers and their families, and from my family, to all of us, to all of you, have a Merry Christmas, everyone. If you like what you hear, And I don't just mean this poem, but I mean this prayer, this column. I mean, if you like it in general, if you like what you're hearing here on this podcast, tell your friends. Share it on social media. Subscribe on Spotify, iTunes. It's all free. We're not making any money. This is not about money. This is just because, I guess, we like to talk to you. And I get so many letters and messages from people that like this podcast. Some listen to it while walking the dog. Some listen to it while they're in their car. Some, I don't know, wherever they are, wherever you are. I just want to thank you. Jeff Carlin is here. We're going to talk about Christmas. He's the executive producer at WGN Radio. And to me, he's the best news producer, radio producer in town. If we sound decent, it's because Jeff makes it so and can even sometimes take the croak out of this voice of mine, which I know is not like a nightingale. I just say that. And I'm John Cass, Orthodox Christian, husband, father. Those are the important things. Columnist at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. And you? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Okay, by now, those of you listening, I don't know about who's not listening because you can't hear me, but if you're listening, you know that this is the Christmas podcast of the Chicago Way, the Christmas edition, and it's decorated by the notorious elfin buttocks picture from the tree of an ornament that I made when I was in fourth grade in Mrs. Ellis's class. And I carved the anatomically correct buttocks, elfin buttocks. My mom saw it and pulled my ear and then gave me a crack on the back of my head with the ring, you know, with the rings, the wedding ring hand. And that hurt, Jeff. I'm just saying, that hurt.
I love that. That is the quintessential John Cass childhood story, as everyone has imagined it.
A reader named Gina Williams emailed me, and I asking for me to publish it, and I sent it to Kristen, and I thought she'd just get a laugh, like, we're never going to, don't ever put this out. And then Kristen basically said in the thread that we should both, you know, it should be published. It should be put out there.
Let be it so. I love that.
She like left me hanging, so I had no other choice. Here's my boss telling me, put it out there, so you know. But you have what are your favorite ornaments? Mine are not the elfin butt. My favorite ornaments are the ones the kids made. But do you guys have a tree?
Yeah, we do. Christine and I do. It's, you know, we've been doing a tree for years. It's the same tree because I'm allergic to anything pine or fir. That's a fun tidbit I learned on a trip to Oregon years ago. And if anybody knows Oregon, all it is pine and fir. But yeah, we have our, you know, Christmas ornaments from over the years at different radio stations on our tree, and some stuff that like my mom gave me. But my favorite ornaments overall would be, like, my mom had this tradition where she gave everybody a Christmas ornament of the year. you had a date on it, and it was some either ceramic scene or like a glass ball. Or those were always probably my favorites. But I definitely, I think I made a couple of those popcorn ball ornaments as a kid for my parents. Yeah, I think they still have a couple of those in boxes under the house somewhere.
I've always had a scam. I thought it would be a get rich quick deal for Christmas and help old people. I thought
a scheme.
Yeah, scheme. But you know, where you, it's like, you know, basically raising money for the poor, but putting your name out front, you know, so you can get the credit. You know,
right.
Some charities do that, and I don't understand. Why don't they just, if you know a poor person, go find your church, ask the priest, give me the names of some poor people that need help, and then go visit them and give them the money. You know, you don't have a virtue signal. But my plan was to have senior citizens carve apple heads. You remember that plan? It was to carve apple heads in the shape of, you know, like apples into human heads. Very easy. And then dry them in a slow oven, right? And they would turn to leathery, shrunken heads. And then you put lacquer on them and glue some white cotton and put a hook in there. And you got, there you got elves, right?
Sure, yeah. Why, I don't know why more people don't do that.
I know. It would. Betty said, and the boys said, that it would be like giving shrunken heads for Christmas, and they stopped me. But I still think it's probably something that'll take off someday, you know?
Yeah, it's bound to. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine not. Unless, it sounds very Pirates of the Caribbean of you.
Well, you just, nothing like shrunken heads on your tree. All right, so let's get into the news first, Jeff, because there is news. Even at the end of Christmas, the end of the year, we have the most disturbing thing from Chicago is that Lori Lightfoot has not been caught in another lie. What about that?
So I've got to call her a liar out of the box here. Is that your point?
No, no, no. I mean, I like her. You like her.
Just get that. I know. I'm just teasing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. We've talked about this before, or at least offline. She's in a jam, that's for sure. Is she outright lying? I don't have the facts on it in front of me, but there is a story. So I'm sure everybody's seen the Anjanette Young story by now.
But we'll explain it.
Those who haven't, a social worker, a longtime social worker in Chicago, coming home from work, getting out of her work clothes into her PJs, the pound on her door, and it's the Chicago police, and they batter down her door, put her in handcuffs, naked, and search her apartment for 45 minutes while she pleads for them to stop, that they've got the wrong place.
Well, she was naked when they came in. They didn't take her clothes off, right?
Oh, yeah. She was trying to put her PJs on, but she didn't get that far. And so, yeah, she wasn't stripped or anything like that, no. In fact, a cop did give her a coat at one point. There's question about the size of that coat. I don't know why that's important, but...
What, was it too small?
Well, yeah, apparently they gave her some open front, like a non-zipping jacket, so she pretty much had her back covered so she could stay warm in her own apartment, but she was still naked in the front. And so then somebody eventually got her a towel, I guess, or a robe maybe.
Right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, she was treated very, very poorly by the Chicago cops. There's no way around that. I mean...
They thought they were arresting a drug dealer, right?
Well, they were looking for a man, so they didn't think they were arresting a drug dealer. They thought they were possibly detaining somebody who was harboring a drug dealer at that point.
Right.
Yeah, and it turned out they had the wrong house. It turned out that there was questionable tape about the validity of the warrant to begin with by some of the cops. I mean, they're just... a lot of problems with the way this happened, and even the mayor has come out and said it was poorly done and is going to be a training tape, quote unquote, from the body cams for future cops.
But that's not the real issue. The issue is
no.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot, when that story broke, the CBS News Television was going to run the video. They had a video of it. And Lori Lightfoot's law department, the Corporation Counsel's Office, which is really the People's Law Department, but in reality, Lori's the boss of it, fought CBS and tried to suppress the video, kind of like Rahm Emanuel did. When Lori Lightfoot was confronted, she lashed out at members of the media, right? Saying that they're liars and that they weren't telling the truth. And it turns out, what happened, Jeff? Who apologized the other day for not telling the truth?
That was a Mayor Lori Lightfoot, yes.
And what did she say?
Well, she had to apologize to Gregory Pratt, one of your colleagues at the Tribune, about saying that he didn't have his facts right about the story and the timeline of which she knew the story, which is always interesting, too, because, quick side note, in the pandemic, you always have one pool reporter asking all these questions written by their colleagues in other newspapers, which I hope has been good as for journalists on the whole in the city, is like bonding and, you know, at least feeling like they're in this together. So you have usually have Mary Ann and Ahern getting yelled at by the mayor for many other journalists' questions, which is always funny. But anyway, that's an aside. So she had to apologize. She said she lashed out at a journalist saying that they didn't know their facts and that they had had the timeline wrong and that, you know, that this is just bad for journalism.
And she didn't know anything about it.
Right. She said she had not heard about it until she saw it on the news. In fact, the morning after, I believe it was, the CBS Dave Savini story aired. And then we get the fact that there are emails, apparently, and it comes out that she knew about this, at least that there was an issue in from her law department. Now, however, so let's back up a little bit, John, too. The timeline of it is that this happened 2 years ago, roughly, and Ms. Young's lawyers had tried earlier this year, late last year, to get access to these tapes because they're clearly going to file a lawsuit against the city. They hadn't filed a lawsuit yet, but that's coming. So the Chicago City Law Department, in what they do to protect anybody working for the city, they try to block it, forcing it to go to a judge to say, hey, should this be released? Is this going to endanger a COPA investigation of all things? Because it's not like they were investigating her for any crimes because she didn't do anything. And they knew they were at the wrong house, but it was a COPA investigation that they said that they needed to keep this secret for, which that's a whole other thing. So the judge says, yes, the tapes can go to the lawyer, but the lawyer has to agree not to release the tapes to anybody else. So this investigation doesn't get soiled. And then fast forward to Dave Savini getting his hands on the tape from, we're not sure, but all the signs point to the lawyer. This gets out. And then Mayor Lightfoot says, that's the first she's seen of this. Well, in reality, no, she knew about this. And then, of course, this incident happened before she was even mayor. But she knew about the law office trying to keep this tape from becoming public because that's what happens. They didn't make it very clear to her, probably or clearly, what it was and the severity of what it was. They just filed it probably in a report, and she signed off on it.
If Lori Lightfoot wants you to testify on her behalf, you should do it because you've proven your concern for her well-being in this discussion. But
my concern for her well-being, I'm laying out the facts and just making not trying to perjure myself and be misquoted later.
There are facts and there are facts, right? And right. She's a lawyer, and she knows that letting this out there would not have impeded the investigation, but helpful.
Right.
The point being, her credibility is at stake. I don't know how many times can you, I didn't know about the tape. Oh, I did know about the tape. I'm sorry. Don't get your roots done. I had to get my roots done. How many times did we have to hear her talk tough about Chicago Teachers Union, and then cave and roll over, and now the kids aren't even in school. And even Jake Tapper, of all people, who I thought was going to be the press secretary for Joe Biden, right? I mean, clearly he served that way at CNN, has been saying the kids should be in school. Everybody says that. The whole thing, I think, I don't know what's wrong with her comm shop. I don't want to.
I know, yeah.
What is going on there? I mean, part of it could be, Jeff, part of it could be that politicians have the COVID is great for politicians. You brought this up at the beginning. They don't have to hold news conferences.
Right.
There's one pool reporter asking questions and sort of and depending on who they are, they ask it in a kind of tiny voice.
A lot of this, and I'm not, this is nobody specific, but you get that, and I get this too, why they don't like this, but you have plenty of the asking reporters being like, well, Mayor, I have to ask this because it's on the paper and someone submitted it, but...
I have to ask this. Right. It's not my question. I want to be the bad guy.
I know. I miss the days of seeing a John Cass and a Bill Cameron in a scrum around the daily at City Hall, and there's a million different mic flags, and they're just trying to just throw in darts left and right at the subject of who we all want. I mean, I miss those days.
You forgot Franny Spielman.
Well, Fran, of course, yes.
Fran. So Fran and I would sit, and I'm not saying like the old days were the better days, you know, they're different
times. If we're talking sunlight, I think but anyway.
Well, I don't know if you're talking sunlight. Do you really want? I remember a TV reporter, prominent, who later started another career as a good government type, telling me that. I said, well, why aren't you investigating this, this fence contract, hundreds of millions of dollars for Daley's friends and all that? Or maybe it was the asphalt contract, hundreds of millions of dollars for Daley's friends. And you know what he said? He said, well, John, that's a newspaper story. It's a conceptual story with numbers. We have to have pictures to tell our story. And I said, what, you can't get pictures of guys laying asphalt or asphalt?
Asphalt.
You know, you can't do that. Oh, no, we don't. So what I'm saying is the old days, there are a few people, they're basically the same deal.
Sure.
They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to upset the powers that be. They're a little concerned because they've got people back at their home offices who are sucking up to these politicians, and these poor reporters are in the middle.
Right.
So it's not really, but the difference is that there were news conferences where we stood there, and I'd ask a question, then Cameron, Franny. And whenever the questions would die off, or he would try to avoid, and this goes for Rahm and for Daley, for Harold Washington, then Franny would pipe up and say, "Excuse me," you know, and get real kind of Franny-ish, and there was no avoiding. And now you got avoiding. Now you have, "I'm sorry, Governor, but Amy Jacobson asked this question, and I don't really like her." You know, and they rip on Amy and suck up to Governor Big Boy. I just think COVID's really helped them a lot. You know, the political class.
Oh yeah, it's certainly tilted the playing field.
So what else is on your mind, Jeff Carlin?
Ah, geez, John, that's everything.
What about Madigan? When is Madigan going to go? Are you going to?
Ah, man,
I want to look. Think of a Christmas elf. Think of Mike Madigan with pipe stem legs, pipe cleaner legs, and felt jacket, and anatomically correct in every other way. And now he's on the tree. And
before I answer that, John, I have to ask, how do you make that crevasse on such a tiny little thing? Did you have a heat gun? What was did it come like that?
If my good friend Jeff Carlin would ever read my column rather than just punch the headline.
Well, for those of us who are, you know, only listen to the podcast, John, that can be a realm.
You take a Bic pen. It was a Bic pen. And we weren't allowed, for some reason, we weren't supposed to have them. I don't know. these were the pen, and we had other pens, and girls would put like these little tiny plastic trolls on the end of their pens. I don't know why they had
I don't know. Yeah, they were popular when I was a kid too.
They would pet the troll hair, yeah. You know, and I thought that it was always creepy. Nothing's creepy. It's like the girl version of Bernie Bros, but with, not Bernie Bros. What are they called?
I don't know what you're reaching at there.
Wait, not Bernie Bros. They're pony, my ponies.
I don't, bronies.
Bronies, right. Yeah,
thanks for making me come up with that. Thanks, John.
Yeah, that's it. So then you take the styrofoam buttock and the styrofoam, which serves as the bottom half of the elf, and you just begin carving with a pen. and it worked really well.
And if you were in a classroom, you could get away with it too. Just be a fidget toy.
I was just quietly doing it, and then when I brought it home, and my mom saw it, and she gave me the crack. the ear grab, and the head goes one way, and then let go, and on the rebound, the ring finger comes, backhand crack on the head, and that's for you. But then she gave me a Christmas cookie with
sprinkles, right? So. Yeah.
The point being, Mike Madigan.
Yeah, geez. I don't know. I mean, obviously he is the velvet and the velvet hammer is not because he's stylish. It's because he's slippery and smooth. You had this committee that was getting together and holding hearings supposedly in a bipartisan fashion to get to the bottom of how much Mike Madigan is actually subject A, I think it is, of this investigation, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, he's public official A. Well, the government has in their investigation of Commonwealth Edison and $200 million in fraud and a bribery scheme have built it all around this character named that they call public official A. Now, they haven't proven anything yet. Commonwealth Edison has signed its credibility away or its name away and admitted to being wrong and admitted to its involvement. And I assume they're going to testify, but no one's had, no one's charged Michael Madigan with any crime. It's just out there now.
No, just his right-hand man and one of his chief lieutenants and a close fundraiser. And but those people could easily been doing this surreptitiously without his knowledge. I'm sure of that. Not really. I don't know. So this committee is hearing, or this bipartisan Springfield-based hearing.
With no teeth.
With no teeth, yeah. Run by Democrats, and it just fell apart. They said, nothing to find here. We're wasting our time. This is such nonsense. Let's let this investigation go, which... investigations can go on forever, but it doesn't answer the fact that these are people who are endorsing somebody who is either completely complicit in one of the biggest scams in Illinois history, in dollars and cents, and or that this was happening and he didn't know anything about it. Like this was happening under his nose or with his help. Those are the only real two options here. And if column A or column B are true, then that means he's a scoundrel or a buffoon. I mean, those are the two answers there, because you can't have it either way, some other way.
Pay attention to how certain journalists will transition out of the Madigan era, because it's coming, right? He's gone one way or the other. And the question being, when you have your whole career based on getting tidbits and sweetmeats from the hand of Steve Brown or Mike Madigan himself, and then it begins to change. So to you begin to change, and immediately you're going to have the house, what do we call them? The servants, in journalism that love the order of the way things are. they're going to have to start beating up on Mike Madigan too, because they want to protect their own sources of income, which is, I'm speaking of official sources of income, which is, you know, having a job and covering the news. So we're going to see how that plays out and who starts turning on him and who doesn't. I have a few suspects, you know. There are some trolls down there in Springfield, and all they do is suck up to power. And it's going to be interesting to see how that happens. Don't you think? It's kind of like now with Biden. Let's shift it to Biden. President-elect Biden. He's the president. I know it bothers Trump supporters. I know they don't believe this old guy got 80 million votes. And you know, this, look at the statistical anomalies, and it's really kind of remarkable and somewhat seemingly impossible. But guess what? The Trump legal team did not bring the evidence necessary to overturn. And judges that Trump supported and appointed said, you know, Trump judges said, look, you have to bring the evidence, or, you know, just because you don't like the outcome doesn't mean we're going to change it. Evidence. So now what is going to happen to a media that that worked, I think, except for Fox News and Newsmax on one side, all the others, CBS, NBC, CNN, and MSNBC, NBC, all of them, public television, which is really kind of socialist television, and all of them have been pounding away at Trump and Trump supporters for years now. Trump supporters are stupid, they're racist, they're ugly, they're vile, they're hicks, whatever they call them. How are they going to transition back, Jeff Carlin?
The transition back to what? What do you mean?
How are they going to cover this administration? Are they going to cover this administration the way they covered the last one?
The tone's going to be different. I mean, I'll speak to what I know, in that as a someone who has to follow everything that's happening in the news, I expect it to be slower. The pace at which things happen, which, you know, for good or for bad, usually means that what we're getting, the information we're getting from the government, or at least the, you know, the perception by the president of what's happening in the world, is going to be filtered through many different hands, which, you know, it means that there's lots of room for people to lie. I think that's going to,
or more room.
That's what I mean. This leaves more room. There's going to be more time between the president's actual thoughts and what the public hears. And then that means that there's more people who are going to massage it, or, you know, omit it, that kind of thing.
What about the central question? How, and we've had Tom Bevin on this show, this podcast before. We had him on, you know, after the first 100 days when Harvard came out with its study and all the different university analyses that said throughout the Trump administration, the coverage that he received was, you know, 90% negative. Now we're going to see a different media. So they supported Biden, and they suppressed the Hunter Biden stories along with big tech. So what, and with 80 million people out there not believing what happened, I wonder, how is the media going to respond?
That's my point, is that they're not going to ask the hard questions of they would have, you know, President Trump or President Trump cabinet, or, you know, we're not going to have these questions about, well, the president says this, what do you think about that? That kind of crap. It's they're not going to be pitting the people who are working for the government and the president against themselves, essentially. And it's not going to be positive. I mean, it's not going to be negative, rather. There's no way it's going to be anywhere near as, you know, a fine a microscope. It just, it won't be.
Why?
Well, because they're not going to, they don't have in the back of their mind that the person they're talking to or they're dealing with is tainted or evil or a bad person, which they clearly did with everybody they talked to in the Trump administration. You know, they're just adversarial to a T, and they're not going to have that. This is most of these people who are running Biden's campaign were former editors and producers of news magazines and CNN, and those are the people who are running these campaigns. They're not going to all of a sudden just go back to being, I'm a sound, journalist. They're designed to sell a story, and they're the friends of the people who are, paid to cover that story. So, yeah, of course it's going to be soft and light.
It's going to be, I hope not.
Oh, I mean, hope not. We know it's not. I mean, we know what you saw under Obama on CNN was
no good.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going to have more of that. I mean,
Mr. Bleepin' Tumnus, give me some cakes and tea, and I'll cozy up, and you'll play your pipes for me, sir, and I'll cozy up and have a nap in on your comfy couch. Right. Yeah, that was the media back then. It's not the media of during the Trump years, but it feeds into the idea that what they are. There is a Democratic media complex in Washington. They separate that from working reporters in all the
areas
in the country. But absolutely. In that Beltway group, I mean, I just can't wait, Jeff, for them to do their White House correspondence dinner and their little whiff and poof song, or when they do the Broadway shows, show tunes, with they wear costumes and they dance and sing. And, it's also very waspy and funny and 1800s.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to puke. I went to a few of them. My friend Jack Fuller and Howard Tyner and Anne-Marie Lipinski, and they wanted me to go, and I kept ripping every time I'd come back, like, thanks for inviting me to this big thing, but it really sucked. And and finally they stopped asking me, and that was good because it just revolted me. The idea, I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat, the idea that you're going to dance the dance of grace and favor for political lords in a republic, a free republic, it made me ill. Yeah. And I see it happening again. Jim Acosta will not be angry with Joe Biden. Those who question, like Hunter, make the Hunter story, like that poor kid from Politico who apologized for tweeting it out, forever be shamed. All that stuff will go away. There won't be an adversarial relationship. It'll be, let's protect Joe.
Yeah, you're asking me to say that they're going to actively protect the president. I don't know that it's going to be active in the sense where they're like, ooh, this is going to be good for everyone if I do this thing. I think it's more going to be the relationship type stuff where they're like, hey, this person's telling me this, and they're a friend. I used to work with them at the Post. They wouldn't lie to me. I think it's going to be more just a mission of pressure. That's my take, and I don't think it's organized in the sense that they're like, well, my agenda is this, and therefore I don't think it's that targeted, but I'm sure it is in some cases, but I don't think it is on the whole.
I finally got it out of you. You said it quickly. The sin of omission is a sin too, and so I don't look at. I like Lori Lightfoot, so I don't look at what she's done with this, that, or the other. I like Joe Biden, or I don't like Joe Biden, so I look or don't look. I won't look at the, Hunter Biden. Is that a story? That's not a story. That's Russia propaganda until right before the election, until afterward. It is a story. And then you cover it because by then it's all safe and you don't have to go to there's no news conference. He doesn't have to stand there and defend himself against Sam Donaldson and Bret Baier and people asking, peppering him with questions the way Lori Lightfoot is not peppered by questions now because of COVID. So it's all part of a nice little package, nice little, put a bow on it, Jeff, put a bow.
Or an elfin ornament with a crevasse.
Right. So stick some tape on his face, stick his face to the package so his butt sticks up in the air and you can see it for what it is. It is kind of depressing, but I do have some happy news, Jeff, for Christmas.
Yes, John.
Let's see. I ask people what they're cooking for Christmas. Beer on Facebook, Beer Girl says, steak and beer Christmas Eve, Filipino and beer Christmas Day. Tracy Robert Lieberman says, lasagna, Italian sausage, arancini, Italian bread, garlic bread, stupid broccoli, Caesar with homemade Caesar dressing. I'm getting all the
stupid broccoli. Well, I want to know what that is.
Stupid broccoli. She doesn't like broccoli.
Oh, got it. I thought that was maybe a
little weenie, little weenies in barbecue sauce. Writes Kathleen Sawicki. Judy Peratore Potasba says she's doing king crab's legs this year because the smaller guest list leads itself to that, and horseradish crusted beef tenderloin.
Wait, I love the king crab legs. That reminds me of my days working in the fish market in Halstead and Fulton in high school.
Was this a busy time of the year?
Oh, this was the busiest time of the year. In fact, I used to get I told Christina a story this year that one year I came home on Christmas Eve with two live lobsters in a cooler in the back of my car. I was 16 at the time because this guy, one of the salesmen, like flashy Coke-laden salesmen of the 90s, ask your parents. And he would wheel these crazy deals to have some high-end like lobster hunter or whoever in on the East Coast drop these in a shipment with some salmon coming in from the East Coast from Boston. So this guy was some guy in Maine would drive down to Boston, drop off his package. It would get on a truck. Truck would drive across the country. I'd unload it at like 4:30 in the morning, and these live lobsters would be there. And he would then call around the city and try to sell them to people, like famous people, like Robin Robinson. She came in every year and ordered, got some lobsters, and this is what this guy would do. But at the end of the night, sometimes, you know, he just didn't sell all of them. So we had a couple left over and he gave them to me. And so granted, these lobsters had been pulled from the water 24 hours previous, had been sitting on a dock in a box full of ice for, you know,
right,
15 hours. So I take them home. Right. So I take them home and I'm reeking like fish. I'm a 16-year-old kid. I think, hey, my mom, it's lobster. You know, it's the greatest thing in the world. And my mom says, What would you like me to do with those? And I said, well, I don't know. We cook them. She's like, I do not cook live animals. So the poor thing sat in my car overnight, and then they died. And we never had them. But
what?
I know.
You let them start? You let them
they die? Think, well, here's my thing. They're lobsters in the wild. You know, when it gets cold, they kind of go into a hibernation state and a low oxygen state. And so they die. I mean, they kind of die. You know, they hibernate at times. And so I figured, it'll be okay. They'll just sleep, and then, that didn't happen. I was 16, so it wasn't on purpose.
We used to do lobsters when we lived in Logan Square. We'd have a bunch of friends over, and we'd engage in contraband of natures that I'm not going to explain now. And we'd all sit around and have lobster races, and the lobster that won the race would be the last one in the pot.
I think that's the worst.
You got extra time.
Well, extra time of life. You've just seen everybody else you know and love, you know, die and hear their screams. I want to be first because I know what's coming.
They're bleeping insects and they're like potatoes. You know what's great about potatoes? It's potato chips. They're the perfect platform for salts, fats, and carbohydrates to get in your mouth. Same thing with lobster, butter and garlic. You know, how can you go wrong? You know? So, it's going to be a tough Christmas this year for you.
You know, it's actually not. It's, you know, I mean, it is, you know, from a 30,000 foot view. One of my favorite phrases of all time. but you know, it's not so much just because I, you know, one of the things my mom had before she passed, you know, she kept telling everybody, ah, you know, this Christmas is going to be great. You know, I just want to make it be alive for Christmas. Like, that was her goal, you know, whatever. It's sucks that she didn't make it, but she, before she left us, she and my dad were talking and I were talking, and she just said that she wanted to make sure that we made sure my brother's kids had a great, you know, a Christmas that make her proud. And my mom was always about Christmas. You know, the kids would get put together lists, and my mom would spend a fortune and get us everything we ever wanted. I mean, one year I skied a brand new pair of skis around the backyard in like an inch of snow and scratched the crap out of them. And I was a kid, but my mom had gone through all this trouble to get me a set of skis with like boots and poles and everything, because she wanted me to have what I, you know, everything I wanted for Christmas. And so, you know, it's a high bar to live up to. And I took it upon myself to make sure my brother's kids got all the stuff they wanted on behalf of my dad. And Christine and I put together some stockings, which was a big thing my mom did every year, was give everybody a little stocking with a bunch of stuff that she thought they would like a personal little, you know, thing. And so we put those together, and my dad bankrolled the whole scheme. And I think the kids are going to have a really cool Christmas, even though we can't be there and we're not going to go, obviously, because of the pandemic. But, you know, so it's bittersweet, but I think that it's given me a lot to do and focus on, and a way to celebrate the holiday in a different year or a different way. So I can't say it's bittersweet, that's for sure.
There's always a hole there. It happens to all of us. Yep. I'm thinking about my mom too, Jeff. I'm sorry your mom passed. My mom's isolated and alone. She's in a nursing facility. She was doing so well. And Kristen McQuarrie asked me to write about this, and I didn't want to, because I didn't want her to read it, because my mom gets our, you know, the subscription, my subscription to the Tribune every morning. But I don't think she listens to the podcast. Her hearing's going. She's 90 years old. But she had to be in this facility because she wasn't taking her meds, and you know, it was just getting bad.
Yeah.
And we're constantly arguing with her and trying. She, you know, you don't want her to leave the house and get lost. You know what I mean? It's just. But you know what, Jeff? Now I know that she's not. She can't hug us, right? She can't see their grandchildren. She can't hug them, and that kind of physical isolation is terrible for people, for all of us, and especially for the elderly. And I just feel like the bad son, you know.
I can't imagine that. I mean, I know the feeling of wanting to provide and be, you know, that. Energy. I don't think anyone would call you a bad son. So I wouldn't hang that on yourself.
No, but what I mean is, I call myself that, and I know that it's best for her to be in a place where she gets 24-hour care all the time, and she can't wander off and leave. Right, and it's not that she's like completely out of it. You know, she's lucid. She's funny, she laughs, but you know, she can't use iPhones. We could never teach her how to use them or deal with an iPad. We got her an iPad, all that. She doesn't use it, and I just, it's just not being able to see her that I just worry about, not only my mom but all the moms and dads that are in nursing facilities, or all the ones that you can't see, for everybody out there that you can't see your mom and dad, and you're worried about infecting them with COVID, or they're worried about infecting you. And this sense of physical isolation for all of us is just so crushing that I just can't wait till it's over.
Yep. Me too, John. Your column this week about the things we miss was not lost. It was lost on few because it was perfect.
Oh, you mean with the elfin butt crack in there?
No.
I go out and drive around. That's what I do. I drive around. I can't go anywhere, so I drive. You know what I mean? I look at stuff. Nobody talks to anybody. You can't just walk up to somebody like an open-end video game and talk to some strangers. People don't do that. So Red Dead Redemption 2. I drive, and when I got back, I walk in the door from the doctor, and I heard Buddy's the song Joni Mitchell, you know, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. It was a cover band. It was not even Mitchell, it was a Spotify cover, and I thought, oh shit. But it all passed, and I guarantee you in the yearly Christmas Eve column, which is really a prayer that I write every year and rewrite every year, leaving some spots in and some spots out, and changing it, you know, to be here. I want you to know that this thing that we're all going through is going to pass. It's not going to be forever. We just got to, you know, toughen up. Stand up straight, back straight, chin out, right? Good posture, and deal with it. And we will.
Look after your neighbor. That's, like you said, we're in it together.
Even if my neighbor's a liberal Democrat, I have to look after him?
Yes.
Yes.
We all have our flaws, John, no matter what our stripe.
Thanks, Lord. Yes, I agree. I agree 100%. So, Jeff, I'll see you right before – we'll see each other right before New Year's or right after, okay?
Yeah. Let's get together again and see what's ahead. Maybe we'll see if we can bother Tom Bevan into giving us a crazy prediction for 2021.
We could do those the ridiculous lists. At least we didn't do stupid toys. List of stupid toys. But that's because you have the often buttocks on the photograph of this podcast. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, from our families, from our friends, to you and yours, have a very Merry Christmas, everyone.